Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and today our special guest is Dr. Robert Kleinhens. Dr. Kleinhens is the chief economist for the Kaiser Center for Economic Research, which conducts research on regional, state, and national economies. He has over 25 years of experience and expertise in the private and public sectors, academia, and works as a private consultant. Dr. Kleinhens has spoken to local, state, and national audiences and is a frequent contributor to media coverage on the economy, including coverage in news outlets through California, along with Wall Street Journal, CNBC, Bloomberg News, and NPR. Prior to joining the Kaiser Center, he was deputy chief economist at the California Association of Realtors. Dr. Kleinhens, welcome to our show.
Thank you, Bruce. It's good to be on.
Yeah, it seems like we've known each other a while, sharing some time at Cal Poly Pomona, so that's nice to get to talk to you again.
Thanks. I agree. Certainly had occasion to share war stories during the worst of the recession and housing downturn. It's good to talk now in 2014 where things have decidedly turned around.
Well, you know, we had talked off air about, you know, what it was like having to say what was next when you were in years like 2008 and 9. And we've termed this the Great Recession, I guess, for a good reason. What was different about this recession as far as the depth of it as opposed to others?
The most visible, the most obvious, I think, to all of us was the performance of the labor market going through this recession as opposed to past recessions dating back to the post-World War II era. Generally speaking, when the economy goes into recession, it usually gets in and out and recovers, and the labor market recovers within about 24 months of the start of the recession. In the case of the Great Recession, we saw the recession marked at the beginning by the National Bureau of Economic Research as starting in December 2007, and yet it was only in this most recent labor market report for May 2014 that we finally recovered all of the jobs that were lost during the Great Recession. So comparing a seven-year recovery time in this economic cycle to the typical two-year recovery time is just one way of gauging how severe the recession was.
And when you say that, that has to say also some other things. For 7 years, there's been more labor than demand. How has that affected people's ability to get raises or get hired back at the same wage they had lost their job at?
So we saw the unemployment rate nationally get up to almost 10%. Now it's at 6.3%. And where we think the labor market should be is right around 5.5% to 6% over long run time frame. So we had so many people who were out of work. We also had at least some people who were out of work, and then over time their skills became obsolete. So in coming back to work, they may not have been able to find the same kinds of jobs. A lot of so-called middle-wage jobs have really been hit hard over the last several years, especially during the recession. These are jobs like manufacturing jobs and certain kinds of administrative jobs in offices where a lot of the activities have been taken over, if you will, by some type of technology. And so that middle category of workers really was hard hit going through the recession. And quite frankly, even before the recession, that was the category of jobs that was most at risk. We've seen jobs come back at the low wage end of things, and those wages are creeping up ever so slowly. We've also seen jobs come back at the high wage end of things, where you often have skilled workers, workers with education, maybe in a profession, something like that. And those jobs have come back strongly, and that's where most of the pay gains have also occurred.
Do we also have, when we count jobs and say, okay, now we have recovered all the job losses, does that include people that are working part-time?
Well, that's a good point. So we're just looking at headcounts of people who are on some type of payroll in the United States. And so to say that in the month of May we recovered all of the jobs that were lost during the Great Recession is simply to say that the job count in May 2014 slightly exceeded the peak job count that prevailed prior to the recession. And you're quite right. We still have a somewhat high number and share of workers who are working part-time, especially people who are working part-time but would like to work full-time. That share has come down over the last couple of years. And today's report from the labor market, or I should say from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, indicates that job openings have really picked up markedly. And so I think when you look at the collection of indicators that we have out there right now about the labor market, I would be expecting to see not just an uptick in hiring in the coming months, but an increasing trend of full-time employment as well.
Okay. There's this kind of strange category that's no longer included in unemployment called no longer looking. How big of a segment is that? And I guess, how do you even qualify for that?
Well, so this information we get about the labor market comes from two sources. The one that we're talking about right now is the so-called household survey, where the Bureau of Labor Statistics literally calls and interviews 50,000 households each month to find out about people of working age and whether or not they're working. And so if someone is of working age but indicates that that person, he or she, is not even working, then the person will be classified as such. If the person is looking for work but not employed, that person will be classified as unemployed. If the person is working regardless of whether that person's working full-time or part-time, that person's going to be counted as employed. It's not necessarily the best way of measuring things, but it's what we have to work with. That headline rate of 6.3% that I mentioned a few minutes ago does not include discouraged workers who are working part-time or may have stopped looking for work. That percentage is a little bit over 12% as of May.
Okay. That's historically, if we had always counted it that way, how do we stack up? Is 12% still really not so hot?
I think nobody would be satisfied with a 12% unemployment rate if that were the headline rate that you heard about every
month. Right. Is that why they changed talking about it that way?
Well, it's always been the headline rate has always been reported the same way, but I do think that there's been greater attention directed toward some of these broader measures of unemployment, especially going through this particular recession because it's been so deep and because it seems to have displaced many more people for a far longer period of time compared to past recessions. Again, bearing in mind that this economic cycle and the labor market recovery from the cycle is quite a bit longer, many times longer than what we've seen in the past.
Now, you mentioned things are improving. The first quarter GDP growth for 2014, did that surprise you?
Yeah, I think most economists certainly were expecting at the beginning of the year that we'd be seeing strong growth throughout the year. But of course, we did not anticipate the severe weather that affected much of the country. It didn't affect Southern California directly so much. But I think it did put a damper on things, even in the local economy indirectly. So if anything, I would say that the GDP reading for the first quarter was and will probably prove to be an outlier, that we're looking at much better growth in the remaining quarters of 2014 and then going forward into 2015. And by much better, I'm saying that last year we saw growth in GDP of just under 2%. This year we're looking at about 2.5% growth rate for all of 2014, even with the weak first quarter numbers. So that means we've got to grow it faster than 2.5% the remaining quarters of the year.
Okay.
And next year a little bit faster.
Okay, so 2015, will the pace of growth be such that we should have an impact on interest rates?
Great question, because while everybody likes to have low interest rates, when the economy heats up, when it moves into another gear, it's not uncommon for the financial markets to anticipate that and anticipate the possibility of inflation. And that, in turn, typically drives interest rates up. What we have going on right now, of course, is a heavy dose of intervention on the part of the Fed, keeping long rates low in the form of their bond buying, their so-called QE3 activity. Now, they're tapering that off. We've heard that term used many, many times in the news. It's expected that by the end of the year, that effort to keep long rates low will be over with. And so that means that things like mortgages should float more freely in response to market conditions. The Fed's still going to be keeping a low short-term rate policy. That is to say, its Fed funds rate, which is effectively at zero right now, will continue to be low probably well into 2015, because they're very much aware of the fact that while the economy is picking up, it's still in a fragile state.
When they first talked about pulling back the cookie jar, 10-year T-bill took off and got into, what, mid-threes? And today it's about 2.6. So is that part of the natural market reaction to where they thought interest rates were going to be able to be supported at 3.5, and then the market wasn't as good as we thought, and it came back down? Is that how it works?
Well, yeah, and I think that the markets, the intervention, and then the situation abroad all play a role in determining interest rates in general. But, of course, the 10-year is most helpful for understanding the sort of long-run direction of interest rates. So yes, early last year, I guess it was in May of last year, we heard the announcement that they would be winding down the Fed bond buying effort. That caused an immediate spike in rates, as you point out, and then things tapered off. And they actually backed off, of course, from that initial announcement and reassured everybody around the globe, not just here in the U.S., that it was going to be a deliberate and slow winding down process. So that tended to smooth things out. But one of the concerns is what's going to happen abroad as the Fed winds down these programs. Emerging markets, which benefited from our low interest rate policy, are potentially going to hit some headwinds, if you will, because they're looking at the flight of capital into their economies, maybe turning around and leaving and coming back to the safe haven of the United States as our rates increase. Meanwhile, just about anywhere around the globe where there's any kind of unrest and news of unrest, we've heard more than we would like to this year, that tends to drive capital from other points around the globe into the safe haven in the form of U.S. Treasuries, and that tends to keep rates low. So we've got that working in our favor, even as the Fed winds down its interest rate policy. But if the economy grows as we expect it to, roughly 3% this year, a little bit faster, through the rest of this year, and a little bit faster next year, that would tend to lift interest rates no matter what.
How responsible do you think these low interest rate policies have been to asset prices, both real estate and stock?
Well, so that is indeed one of the big questions about whether or not this policy was well-intentioned and whether it you know, they should have stuck with it as long as they have. My sense is that the asset markets have benefited from the low interest rate policy. Money is seeking the best possible rate of return, whether it's a domestic investor or an international investor. And so in the absence of return on fixed rate assets, money flowed to the stock markets or the equities markets. It also flowed into real estate. And so I think that certainly helped to prop up home prices. It certainly enabled us to hit new highs in the various stock market indexes, as we've been seeing the last couple of days. So I would definitely draw a link between the two.
And by and large, that's, for short-term anyway, that's made people feel a lot better about their personal situation. It's probably made pensions feel better about their situation.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting point. So when we talk about the psyche or the sentiment that both consumers and businesses have, again, I think the operative word here is fragile. It's improved over the last couple of years, but both consumers and business still seem to be inclined to look over their shoulder and wonder when the next bad thing is going to happen. Meanwhile, a good performance or an outstanding performance in the stock market certainly helps things. It's improved on the consumer balance sheet. It's improved the financial assets side of things, and households are still looking for a more pronounced recovery on the real estate side of things. And if we take a look at the typical household, they're not so much invested in stocks and bonds as they are in that single asset they call their home that they own. So that recovery in the housing market is probably more important for a broad-based economic recovery than what's happening in the financial markets at the present time.
What's going on in the California economy versus the U.S.? California had a higher unemployment, quite a spread with the nation's number. That's gradually gotten closer and closer, but California still has a higher unemployment number than the U.S.?
Well, it's true that our unemployment rate's higher now. It typically is higher than the national unemployment rate, really through thick and thin. And that's also true of the many of the local county economies as well. So, but the good news is that the California economy has been growing at a faster clip than the national economy. Whether you take a look at the equivalent of gross domestic product, it's gross state product. For the state of California, we've been growing at better than 3% for the last couple of years versus 2 to 3% for the nation as a whole. So California's economy, based on that metric, is growing faster. When you take a look at the labor market, the non-farm job growth numbers for California, we've been growing at least 2% for a couple of years. Over the same time period, the nation's been growing at about 1.7%. So we're gaining ground against the national economy. Our unemployment rate's come down rather quickly. So it's good to report that it's down to 7.8% at the present time. But the long-run average is about 7.5 to 7.7% for the state versus 6.1 for the nation. So you can tell that when you take a look at California, you compare it with the nation, through thick and thin, we tend to have a higher unemployment rate.
When we have a gap as close as it is right now, do we tend to have any outward migration problem, or do we actually have inward migration from the domestic side?
Well, so if we take a look back over the last few years, especially going through the worst of the recession, yes, we had some out migration, but it paled in comparison to what occurred back in the 1990s. The difference between the two was that in the 1990s, with the defense cuts and restructuring that took place, especially here in Southern California, so much of that occurred here in California and in Southern California, but not elsewhere in the rest of the country. So people couldn't find jobs here, but they could find jobs elsewhere. So there was a huge movement, a huge migration out of the Southern California region in particular to other parts of the country. This time around, everybody shared in the pain. And so we didn't see nearly the kind of out-migration in the wake of the recession that we had seen back in the 1990s. Good or bad, that's one of the aspects of this particular recession. It's also one of the reasons why the unemployment rates became so high this time around, because the labor force stayed put, didn't leave and move to other parts of the country the way it did back in the 1990s. So we still have some out-migration occurring. But I think that it's nowhere close to what we had seen back in the 1990s when we were going through, in some ways, a much more difficult set of circumstances.
One of the drivers for Riverside and San Bernardino County usually is new construction of homes. And by and large, that hasn't happened yet. So what do you see the prospects of that for the next couple of years?
Well, so I look at a couple of different measurements when I'm looking at the housing market. When we're talking about new home construction, we're looking at permits that just fell off the edge during the course of the recession. And that was true nationally, statewide, and then locally. So yes, the number of permits really dropped off in the Inland Empire. And for the state as a whole, just to give you a point of reference, for the state as a whole, we typically average about 140,000 plus building permits, both single and multifamily, per year. In boom years, we get over 200,000. But during the worst years of the recession, the statewide permit count was down under 40,000. Last year, we were a little bit over 80. This year, our projection is for 112,000 permits for all of 2014. But as of the first quarter of the year, we're still behind by somewhere around 15%. So we've got some ground to make up. Well, you take a look at the Inland Empire, and with all of the problems relating to the housing crisis that were really focused on the Inland Empire, it's an area where permits really fell off the cliff, and our projections are that they're going to come back much more slowly than in the state as a whole. Now, we lost about a third of the construction jobs statewide during the course of the recession that were in construction. We're getting them back very slowly. Roughly the same percentage of jobs in construction was lost in the Inland Empire, but they're going to come back even more slowly because of the slow return of building permits.
A construction project not only hires people that do that work, but it's a kind of job that creates other activities that are very positive. So is getting construction back like job number one for the California economy? Is that the most important category?
It's very important at all levels, beginning with the national economy and down to the state and the local economies. So we recently took a look at the international trade situation because that goods movement is so important to the Southern California economy, including the Inland Empire. If you take a look at the amount of container activity that preceded the Great Recession and where we are now, the run-up in container activity coming through the two ports, L.A. and Long Beach, during the early part of the last decade, pretty much coincided with the run-up in building activity as well. And then when building activity dropped off, so too did the container activity coming through. And we're talking about building materials as well as the stuff that goes in the homes. So a recovery in housing and specifically a recovery in new home construction is very important for the overall economy because you build those homes and employ construction workers and others who support those jobs. And then the people who buy those homes equip those homes with furnishings and so on. So there's a tremendous ripple effect that works its way not just through a local economy such as Riverside County or San Bernardino County, but at the national level, it's really all important to what we expect to be a much faster pace of growth next year and in 2016.
We only have about a minute and a half left. What do you make of the volume of sales? The projection from Carr was probably around 440. We've been bouncing around 350 or 360. So what do you point to and say that's probably the cause?
Well, the first cause that I see is the constraint on the supply side. But then I think that the that coupled with what's happening on the policy front, requirements for mortgages, the Fed's movement to wind down their program, all of these things I think are creating uncertainty both for consumers and for would-be sellers, whether it be on the new home market or the existing home market. So supply and uncertainty, I think, are the two things that are contributing to a weaker-than-expected housing market this year.
What's interesting, I'm really familiar with charts, and I've never seen a chart of uncertainty. In other words, you're right. That's exactly what's going on. But you can't track uncertainty. It's hard to know when people are going to stop feeling uncertain.
Absolutely. And So I do think there's pent-up demand with low interest rates and prices that are still well below peak. There's a lot of room for affordability and for home sales or for demand to show itself. But if there is hesitation, it's going to show up both in terms of weak supply, new and existing, and it's also going to cause people to think twice before they list their home. Meanwhile, those people who might be thinking about listing their home are seeing that with double-digit price increases in Southern California, they have an opportunity to recoup some of that equity that they lost during the recession. So I think there are a number of things that are working against the supply side. And because prices are moving so slowly and sales are uncertain, I think it's creating a cloud of uncertainty that's putting a lot of participants off at the present time.
Dr. Kleinhans, we've run out of time. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll do it again soon.
Thanks, Bruce. My pleasure.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.